For the gospel today from John, we'll do two things this morning for the homily. First, set a set of context for the reading. When it comes to John, I think it's always a good thing to do to know where we're at in the story, especially this time of the year. Liturgically, they kind of fit together, so that. And then we'll zero in on his central image or point of this Sunday's gospel reading. And it's the same central image we've had now for the last couple of Sundays. As I mentioned before, it's the idea of focusing on the dying and the rising and how that applies to our daily lives, then and now. So first, the question of context. It's important to understand what's happening here. We're in John chapter 12, which means that, at least in terms of how we lay out the calendar, we're actually a week ahead of ourselves based on the liturgy for this year. Because while it's true that we celebrate Palm Sunday next Sunday already, this gospel passage takes place on the afternoon of Palm Sunday historically. So we're sort of a week early, if you will. So what's happened is that Jesus has just raised Lazarus, the chapter prior. He's made his way into Jerusalem. They've welcomed him with palms. And then as soon as that is done, he finds himself in the temple area, most likely. That would have been in the morning. And now, in the afternoon of that day, that Sunday, before he dies, he gives this little speech that we hear today. This conversation takes place. And then as soon as this is done, the verse is cut off, but they say, as this chapter comes to a close, that when Jesus is done, he hid himself from them and disappeared for a time. So he goes away for a couple of days into hiding. So that means that the next time he's going to appear publicly, before the crowds, before the city, before the world, the next public appearance after this one is him on the cross. This is his last public speech. This is it. And he gives it knowing full well what's coming to him in the few days ahead. He's come to the city for a reason. He's come there to give up his life. And we hear about it here today in veiled terms, which we'll get to in a second, but that's what's going on here. So this is the last time that we'll hear him publicly before he goes into his Last Supper, his arrest, his trial, his crucifixion, and then all of a sudden we're at Easter Sunday already. That's how John lays this out. What is it that makes him start giving this little conversation? What is the occasion that sparks the remarks on his part this time, this last time that he talks like he does? It's the arrival of the Greeks. Who are the Greeks? I like a joke, these are the frat houses. They came even looking for Jesus. That's a joke, you're supposed to laugh. The Greeks will be those from the Gentile territories to the north. And they are people who were sympathetic to Judaism, but were not Jewish by heritage or by birth. Likely not circumcised, likely not following all the dietary laws, but they are ones who understood the Jewish God, knew the commandments, understood the temple, and wanted to follow as best they could. So they were kind of on the margins, if you will. So they come for Passover. That's why Jesus is there too. Passover is approaching. It's only days away in this story. And they've come to the city like all the other pilgrims. And in this case, these Greeks come looking for Jesus. They've heard about him. They're curious about this Jewish preacher, and they want to meet him. So they find Philip and Andrew, who are the two strongest Greek speakers among the 12 because of where they're from, the Greek territory. It's on the border. And they're sort of like the translators, if you will. And they say, show us your master, where is Jesus? Andrew and Philip come and find Jesus and tell him the Greeks are here to see you. Jesus' response is, now has my hour come. What does he mean by that? This means that he begins to realize that at this point in the entire unfolding plan, his message is now no longer just for the Jews. Word of him has reached the outer territories. It's about to spread beyond the chosen people's boundaries. And for that to happen, he knows that now the story must take a dramatic shift. Now the time has finally come to take his message to the entire world. So that way, as today's gospel winds up, he can draw all to himself, all being everyone to himself. But he knows that the only way that's going to happen is for him to first die and rise. So the story can't go on any further now. It's got to stop until he does what he came to do. That's his hour. My hour has finally come. He's talked about his hour since the first pages of this gospel. It's there all the time. What's his hour? What's his hour? When does it come? They always ask. The hour is his death. The hour is his resurrection. It is now arrived. When even the pagans are coming to him, he knows that now the time has come. So that sets the stage for this last public speech in the temple area before he disappears for a few days and is arrested a few days later and is shown to the world as the crucified criminal, the rejected king in Jerusalem. That's that. What's the message? What's the core of his point today? This is part two. Like I said, the same thing we've heard about the last few Sundays, Sunday 3, 4, and 5 of Lent this year in cycle B, are all back to the idea of the dying and the rising. That's what he's talking about. And today, to get at it, he uses this brilliant, beautiful image, one of my favorites from the Gospel, always loved it, about the grain of wheat. He says it very famously, unless a grain of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains just a single grain of wheat. But if it dies, it produces much fruit. Unless a grain of the wheat falls to the ground, it remains just a grain of wheat, but if it dies, it produces much fruit. It's a great image. Jesus grew up in an agrarian or agriculturally heavy territory. He spoke to farmers all the time, people who raised food for a living, like we all used to do once upon a time here in this country. So they would have got this image right off the bat. When I was a kid, I was fascinated by the idea that you could take little seeds, you know, corn, carrots, onions, potatoes, put them in the dirt, you know, cover them over, and then you let the moisture and the ground temperature act upon them, and then within days, pretty soon a little plant begins to rise out of the earth. And every once in a while, you can kind of take and pull up a little stalk of corn before it got too tall, and you could see at the bottom of the corn's roots, the kernel still there, breaking down as it was, with the roots coming out of it, and the stalk coming up off the top. In order to give life, the seed gives up itself. The seed gives up its own self, breaks down and dies to itself so that life can be born out of it. And then, of course, that little kernel of corn produces, God willing, in right conditions, this abundant, prosperous harvest. Same thing for a little kernel of wheat. It shoots up this beautiful stalk and the grain head produces all these extra wheat kernels, right? So that's true of seeds everywhere. One little seed in the ground produces all this fruit, but only if it dies. It must break down, give up itself, end its own self, and in its own self-sacrificial giving over, it raises up this abundant harvest, more of itself. Jesus, of course, is applying this to himself. He is the grain of wheat that will come down to the earth. And indeed, he'll go under the earth. He'll be buried. He will die. And as he does so, he will produce much fruit, not just for Jews, but for Greeks too, for the entire world, hence his image here. The fruit has to go beyond Israel, has to save everybody. And the only way it's going to happen is if he willingly gives up his life. So he is the grain of wheat that will fall to the ground and die so that it can produce much fruit. And he says other things too, right? But it all comes back to the same point. It's the dying and the rising that he speaks of. This is what's coming to me. Do the crowds get it? No. The Father speaks from heaven too. Do they get that? No. But Jesus understands. He says, you will understand only when you see what's coming. At the end of this week, incidentally. When I'm lifted up in front of you, then you will know what I'm trying to say. And with that, he disappears for a few days. I like the image, and I do think that we find ourselves in this situation and applying this image to ourselves more than we probably sometimes realize. And I could say, let's just call it this morning, three different ways that maybe we find ourselves like this grain of wheat that falls to the ground and dies to produce much fruit. So the first way would be kind of like this. Think about what it means to be anybody in the world who gives for somebody else, for the many, the one for the many. Think about police officers, firefighters, law enforcement personnel, medical responders. That's an example of somebody who gives of oneself, staying up nights, being on call, running around town doing things. They do it so that with the many can be safe. They live lives of sacrifice, of putting themselves in harm's way so that other people can live and have freedom and can have prosperity. Without them, communities can't run. They let us be because they give of themselves. And it produces much fruit when communities prosper because it's a safe place to live and to be. There is that. Doctors, something of the same, right? Being on call, staying up late, long hours in operating rooms to give of oneself so somebody else can live. Teachers, in front of a classroom for hours and hours and for years and years at a time, one person teaching, grading papers, staying up late, getting paid, frankly, not enough in our current economy. They give of themselves, one person, to raise up an entire classroom of harvest over and over again. It doesn't happen unless somebody gives and sacrifices to make it happen. And then obviously parents, many of you here before me, parents, grandparents, this is raising kids, is it not? To welcome new children into a household, either by adoption or to bring them birth through natural means, all of that generosity brings forth life, but it takes tremendous sacrifice on your part. Parents die to selves all the time to raise up more fruit for the next generation. That's what childbearing and raising is all about, this very gospel image. And you can't do it without a lot of dying to self. There's just no other way. Pastors, same thing. We're supposed to give of ourselves for communities and give and give and give and be spent. Why? To raise up an abundant harvest of all of you. That's why you call us Father. We are heads of households, and we're to live sacrificially for your benefit and for that of the kingdom. So this fundamental pattern that Jesus speaks about is how life comes forth, period. It's how giving takes place. That's what stewardship is. You know, you give money to make the parish and school run. You give to causes all the time. We do this because that's what lets things flourish. So if households become sterile and stale, or parishes become sterile and stale, or communities do, it's because at some core, the sacrifice has dried up. Sacrifice drives everything. Your sacrificial giving, which we must have, frankly, keeps the lights on around here. It keeps our causes happening, your volunteering, your prayers, your time, your sacrifices. All of that lets everything run. And when it stops, when selfishness takes over, we don't give anymore, then everything starts to shrink and life begins to run dry because the seed is no longer giving of itself. It's just hanging on. What does Jesus say? If you try to hang on to this life, you're going to lose it. If you let it go, you're going to create it and save it. Families are no different. Communities, no different. So that's the first way, right, that I think we find ourselves in this reading all the time. We are part of the seed idea over and over again. Another way would be almost the opposite. It goes kind of like this. If on the first instance we're invited to spend ourselves completely without reservation, it's also true that a dying to self takes place internally when we realize our limits, what I can and can't control. I hear all the time, many of you, and I've experienced this myself, talking about anxieties, about being weighed down by the burdens of life, things that seem overwhelming to people. And part of the root of that is because in today's world, we don't know how to turn things off anymore. It all grabs at our attention. And we think we have such control over things that we really, frankly, have no control over at all. So much of life out in the world, we have no control over at all. Just a fact. And yet, if we don't recognize that, we're going to be overwhelmed by it. So when Jesus says the seed must fall to the ground and die, another way to say it is we must die to self and realize when I must let go, hand something over, take my hands off, and let God's own providence take over from there. True about raising kids, running parishes, running the country, you name it, there's a handing over that must take place, realize in humility, we are not God. That's dying to self. That's the seed falling to the ground and realizing, I've done what I can, the rest is out of my hands. Any farmer knows that too. Once the seed grows in the ground, there's nothing else you can do. It's all in God's hands. That's the second way, right? So first way, give completely. Second way, realize when you have to stop giving. Paradoxical, but still true. And third way might go kind of like this. Third way that this gospel story plays itself out in our lives is sometimes we give and give and give and give, be generous and generous, sacrifice, sacrifice, make all the effort, and then it's thrown back in our face, unappreciated, unnoticed, uncared for, rejected, not liked, whatever. Mom and Dad, you spend time during the day cooking and cooking in the kitchen, you make something, and you put it in front of your spouse or a child, and they say, I don't like that, make something else. That's one of those moments, right? You could do the wrong thing and take the plate and just, you know, don't do that. In that moment, we say, all right, seed's got to die here to self. I'm going to recognize in this moment what Jesus recognized on the cross, that he gave himself completely for those who took his life. He died forgiving his attackers. He died praying for the people who are driving nails into his hands, the seed giving oneself up for people who know nothing about what he's doing, care nothing for the sacrifice, but he chose to love them anyway and take it on the chin, so to speak, because he recognized that doing that stops the cycle of vengeance, violence, reaction, jealousy that must stop in the world if it's to flourish. If fruit is to be raised up, then internally we must make the decision not to fight back sometimes, or to hand it over internally. That bears fruit too, tremendously, as the sacrifice on the cross did so beautifully. So I could list a lot more examples, that's just three. The point is, and this is why Christianity is so powerful, okay, what Jesus establishes in his own life, death, and resurrection is the fact that God recognizes this pattern of our life of dying and rising and says, I'm going to bless that. In fact, I'm going to dive right into it and redeem it from the inside out. I realize, God says, your sacrifices. I get that in this world, life only comes from death. It's a fundamental fact of the fabric of your world. I get it. I could stand back and say, that's nice, or I could jump into it myself, offer my own life, and in so doing, make all your sacrifices worthwhile when they're joined to mine. So he takes what was at one point just a way of living and dying and elevates it to a way of being saved. Now the dying and rising has meaning. Now all the sacrifices have power. Now it all takes on a whole new scope because God says, I've done it too. I've entered your condition. I've joined your family. I've done it from the inside out. It's not empty anymore. Because now, not only does it raise up life for you, but it joins you to me. So Christianity recognizes that this fabric of the world isn't a waste. It's power and it's union with the God who loved us enough to fall to the ground and die right in front of us to raise up the fruit of salvation, you see. It's a powerful, powerful truth about our Christian faith. No other religion claims what we claim about this. It means the ordinary dying and rising of life now has power. This is what he means in today's short little gospel speech. So in the last couple weeks now of Lent, which we're in now, this Passion-tide season, we focus on the cross in a special way. It's good to bring these things to mind. Next time we find ourselves going, why am I doing this? This is a lot of work, raising these kids, running this parish, doing this job, teaching these classes, all these things that we do that sometimes are so unnoticed. If we find ourselves saying that, we look to the cross and say, but he sees it. He sees it, loves it, blesses it, and says, it will bring forth fruit. I promise you, because it's joined to my sacrifice. Our sacrifices have power because the cross has power. And that way he has saved us and freed us and raised fruit. For that reason, we praise him, we thank him, and give him all the glory. We glory in the cross and resurrection of our Lord Jesus Christ.